All right. Well, I'm Mary Stevens. This is really awkward. So I'm in Horticultural Sciences at the University of Florida, and I'll be presenting to you the efficacy of a 1,3 dichloropropene and chloropicrin mixture used with totally impermeable film for nutsedge control. So here's kind of a cool picture of, we have nutsedge that has grown through the plastic and into a muskmelon. So this is just to kind of show you what kind of problems that nutsedge can give you out in the field. So obviously this is unacceptable for consumers and unacceptable for producers, so this would have to be culled out. And this actually happened more times than I would like to admit. So nutsedge is a pretty big problem in most agriculture, but especially in plasticulture, because it has a strong midrib and a sharp tip that helps it grow through the plastic and into our vegetables. Another problem is that fumigants and herbicides don't have very good efficacy, and a lot of them aren't labeled for horticultural crops. And the ones that are, they just kind of stink. Another problem is that it's highly competitive, like most weeds are, with the crop for nutrients, water, and space. So another problem with nutsedge is that it has many means of reproduction. You have your mother yellow nutsedge plant here, and it produces rhizomes that grow under the ground that give rise to your daughter plants. And it also produces tubers, and these tubers are left in the ground after the plant dies or if you pull it. So if you have a pretty significant population, you can for your next growing season, the tubers will give rise to more nutsedge, and then you have a bigger problem. So I just pulled a few of the more compelling numbers from the literature. There's lots out there that shows how it impacts your yield. So the first one showed that in bell pepper, full season yellow nutsedge competition reduces yield by more than 80%. Purple nutsedge reduced onion yield by 89%. And in a study done with watermelon, they calculated the critical density of yellow nutsedge to be 2 plants per meter squared, which means that just these 2 plants per your meter squared resulted in a 10% decrease in your watermelon yield. So moving on to fumigants, we used to be able to use methyl bromide to fumigate the soil. It was a broad-spectrum fumigant. It was good for, you know, soil-borne pests, insects, weeds, and nematodes, and it was highly volatile, which is important because we want the fumigant to, evenly distribute into the soil so you can control as many pathogens as possible, and you want it to dissipate from the soil in a timely manner so you can plant. Unfortunately, methyl bromide was determined to deplete our ozone, so it had to be phased out. And during this phasing out, they would allow growers critical use exemptions. If you could show that by not using methyl bromide, there was a significant market disruption, or if it just wasn't economically feasible. So these have been decreasing ever since. And this year, the only one available is for strawberry production in California. So this doesn't even apply to our Florida growers anymore. So obviously lots of alternatives have been looked at over the years. Most of them aren't nearly as efficacious, and they cost a lot. Another problem is the long plantback interval. So sometimes you'll apply your fumigant and have to wait several weeks or even a month before you can plant your crop into it without damaging your crop. Whereas with methyl bromide, you could apply it and about a week later you could plant your crop, which was great. Another problem with some of them, like methyl isothiocyanate and dimethyl disulfide, is that they have an odor issue. Dimethyl disulfide in particular has a very strong garlic odor that humans can detect 2 parts per billion, so it's quite the problem. So this brings me to the fumigant of interest is PICLOR 60. We have 1,3 dichloropropene that controls nematodes and some broadleaves. And then chloropicrin has been around for a really long time, known as a bactericide and a fungicide. So we have a 39 to 60 mixture of these, which gives us PICLOR 60. So you just have more broad spectrum control. So fumigants are used in conjunction with films, also known as mulch. If you don't mulch the ground after you fumigate, it just dissipates into the air immediately and virtually doing nothing. So on the left here, we have low-density polyethylene. This is what most producers like to use because it's cheap. It doesn't do the best job of holding the fumigant in the ground, but they tend to like it. So in the middle is VIF, or virtually impermeable film. It has the nylon layer in the middle, so you get a little bit more retention of your fumigant, so it sticks in the ground a little longer and works in the soil. Then on the right, we have TIF, or totally impermeable film. It comes in 5 and 7 layers. We use the 7 layer for my experiment, so this is what I have drawn up for you. What makes it stand out is the ethyl vinyl alcohol layer in the middle. You get less permeability to your gas emissions and to weeds, but it's a little more expensive, so producers tend not to want to use it. So the objectives of our study was to determine the retention of PIG 60 by TIF to see if we could get significantly higher retention compared to VIF, then determine the efficacy of PIG 60 used on nut sedge control to see if we get better control, and ultimately see if we could reduce the fumigation rates but maintain your efficacy. So this is what it actually looks like out in the field. We had 6 treatments. You're untreated with VIF, 280 kilograms per hectare under VIF and TIF, and then 3 lower rates, 224, 168, and 112 kilograms per hectare, all under TIF. So this is a picture of fumigation in action. If you haven't seen it, it's kind of cool. It's pretty streamlined. So we have the PIGCLOR 60 was shank applied in this single row combination bed press. So this is what most producers use, only they'll have bigger implements that can do about 3 beds at a time. So what happens is the fumigant is put into the ground, and then the bed is made, and immediately the plastic is laid over top, just all in one shot. So my plots were 100 feet long, and the beds were 8 inches tall and 30 inches wide, which is standard procedure in North Florida. So on June 27th, we applied the fumigant. I couldn't have asked for a better birthday present. And 33 days later, we could we could plant our Athena muskmelon on July 30th. The plants were spaced 20 inches apart so that we could have enough plants for yield data. So after the fumigant is applied, we take VOC readings. VOC stands for volatile organic compounds, and these are measured in the soil air underneath the film. So this is done by puncturing the film, and then you insert the tip of this machine into the hole, and it gives you an isobutylene equivalent, so you can calculate how much PIG 60 is left in the soil. So this is a handheld photoionization meter. It's kind of cool. So afterwards, you tape the hole, and I would repeat this 4 times per bed, giving 16 measurements per treatment. And I do this about every 2 to 4 days until the measurements were undetectable, and then we could transplant the muskmelon into the field. So along with the VOC measurements, I counted nut sedge at 30, 60, and 90 days after fumigation. Muskmelon were picked, counted, and weighed for yield, and then it was analyzed using PROC-GLM. So this is the picture I took before I took my 90-day fumigation, my 90-day nut sedge count, just to kind of show you that this is a potential problem for growers. If there's no way to control your nut sedge, this is what happens. I was pretty horrified to drive up to it, so I can imagine that producers would be as well. So some data. So here we have the PIGCLOR concentration under TIF. So this is just the how much fumigant is left under the tarp. And notice here after 14 days, your 2 higher rates under TIF, you're obviously getting more retention. And what I really wanted to point out here was that the 168 rate was not different than the high rate under TIF. So this kind of drives home the point that TIF is retaining your fumigant in the ground longer. Next is the effect on nut sedge density. I just wanted to point out here that the 2 higher rates, again, And the little bit lower rate of the 224 under TIF, we're controlling your nut sedge better than your control, and after 90 days, better than everything else. So this kind of shows us that maybe we can reduce our rates but still maintain efficacy. And then the yield, just to show that the high rate under VIF, while it's not different than the other treatments, it is different, or it still isn't different than the control. So this is what your producers like to see. If they can, you know, increase their yield, potentially they can increase their profits. And then we ran the numbers because, you know, producers, if you're not going to save any money, then they're not going to change their practices. So even though TIF is a little more expensive than VIF, by reducing the rate of PIG 60, you can save a little bit of money per acre. So based on 30,000 acres, that would mean a savings of $420,000. And this number, this 30,000 acres, comes from like a rough estimate of how many growers, tomato and bell pepper growers, we have using PIG 60. And with that, I would take any questions. All eight of you. They have looked at using brassicas and like soil solarization to kill weeds and all the pathogens, but as far as that, I'm not sure. The nut sedge seeds. So, nut sedge seeds, it will produce seeds, but they're not usually viable. So, they mainly reproduce by tubers in the rhizomes. Yeah. You have a question?